Hello and welcome to another edition of the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann. For those of you who've been listening over the past few months, you know that today is the day where we finish the first of our treks together. We've made it to the last of Holmgren's 12 Principles of Permaculture, Principle 12, Creatively Use and Respond to Change. If you've been listening to the show through all this time and find it's of value to you, please consider stopping by and making a donation. You'll find a link for that on the main page of thepermaculturepodcast.com. If you aren't comfortable using that link, which goes to PayPal, email me for some other options. That address is show@thepermaculturepodcast.com. So, creatively use and respond to change. What does that mean? If you've read through Holmgren's Permaculture Principles and Pathways Beyond Sustainability, or plan to in the future, you know, or will quickly see, that this is the longest chapter in the book, and it makes for some pretty heavy reading, even compared to the rest of his work. As when he gets into this, his discussion ranges across a wide array of topics and touches on evolution, chaos, and entropy, as well as landscape, economic, and social successions, among other things. And I don't want to take you down that rabbit hole, as it can be a bit overwhelming. My desire and role as someone who has a passion for sharing this information with you has continuously been to simplify it so that you can make use of it where you are now, through some of these generic general discussions and examples first, and then lead you through some examples that come from my own life. And that's what I want to continue with this show as I share more with you, specifically that way that I use this material in my own design work and life. To that end, I look at and start with Holmgren's subheading for this principle: vision is not seeing things as they are, but as they will be. Though it's kind of ancillary to the principle, this is a reminder for me to have a long view of what it is that I'm doing. Not just that nebulous now, soon, and later that I mentioned before, but of what's going to be in 10 years, 20, 30. What is the work that I'm doing now going to look like in my children's lifetime, or my grandchildren, and ultimately my grandchildren's great-grandchildren, so that I'm forecasting beyond the near term and into the far future. That idea of going to the next 7 generations is what I'm trying to capture. There's this moment in my life that comes to mind of when I went and saw an IMAX movie. I think it was probably the first one that I ever saw, and it was with my parents. Now, some of the details on this are a little fuzzy, and I think I was only 7 or 8 when we went to see it. And I used to watch a lot of space programs as a kid, so I may be mixing some details. I was one of those kids who wanted to go to space camp and be an astronaut. Instead, I went, studied computer science, and now I'm a permaculturist. But anyway, my family and I were in Baltimore, Maryland at the aquarium, and made a trip over to the recently renovated science center that was down there to check things out and see what it was like. When we got there, there was this long line that snaked out and away from this movie theater. And at this point, we didn't know what IMAX was. We'd never heard of it. But it sparked my dad's interest, so he got some tickets so that we could see what this was all about. And after waiting for some time, we finally made it in and sat down, and the movie was kind of this tour of Earth and the solar system, and it started at ground level and then went out into space all the way to the edges of the solar system. And it started with the camera in an overhead view of something on the ground, and it was a bright object. I think it may have been a tennis ball. And then the camera slowly started to pull away, zooming out further and further, and at first we could see just this wider area, and I think it was in a playground, and then the streets, and you kind of box it in, and then back to the neighborhood, and then the city, and further until all that blurred away, and we were looking at the continent, and then the edges of the oceans around North America, moving back until it was the entire Western Hemisphere, and then out into space, pushed past the moon and the other planets, all the way past Pluto, back when that was still part of the Planet Club, until we finally came and were sitting there on the edge of the solar system, and the Earth no longer even a speck on the horizon, and the sun a distant point of light. And then there was this pause, and I don't think it could have lasted more than a few seconds, but it felt like an eternity. Then the camera began its descent back from the edge of the solar system, and then on towards the Earth, slowly gaining speed, faster and faster and faster, until it seemed like the image was in a free fall back towards the Earth, which first appeared as this small dot. It became larger and larger until it took on color and it was blue and we could see it, and then swooping past the moon And there was that kind of iconic image of the Earth from space. There it was, our home, this giant sphere of water with a little bit of land on it. But that plunge continued ever onward so that we could see those details again getting larger and larger until they disappeared, and at last it stops again with the view again filled by that ball on the ground. And there we were, from where we had started, all the way out and all the way back in. And there we are at the beginning. And that moment on the edge, that pause for reflection as we looked over everything within the vastness of the solar system, that gives us a big picture. And it all began from this little place and just moved out ever further and further with this moving vantage point. And that's what I think this principle really gives us, is a vision to see the whole picture. There we are at the beginning, using, you know, our small ideas to fit our work into this bigger whole. And we start small with our observations and interactions until it all grows through the use of the other principles, stepping up on one rung of the ladder after the next until we get to the top. And that's where I see this principle, as on high looking down on all the others, so that we see what all the work is, how it will move and grow over time, so that when the time comes, we're ready to take the right action and do it well. Then once we have that big picture and that idea of how it's going to move and grow, we can begin to play with it and use all the little parts and think of how changes will move it and make it different, so that when you look at that big picture again, you have a new image and can play out some scenarios. And some examples from my life, again, I come back to my blueberry bushes. What happens if they're wiped out by a massive flood? And if a flood's big enough to wipe the blueberries, are there, what else is likely to have gone with them or been affected by them? And as part of my design at the moment, with where the blueberries were located, depends on that maple and the use of the canopy to offer water and make them self-mulching. Are they going to suffer or flourish after that change, with the additional sunlight that's going to reach them that's currently being blocked by the maple? What may become deficient as that moves out? You can take those scenarios and use your imagination in looking at what could happen, and then look at the principle proper to creatively use and respond to change, to come up with a solution. And in doing so, working through these thought processes and bringing up solutions, accept that regardless of what choice you make, something's going to affect it. Change is inevitable, but you're equipped with the tools to handle it. And again, being prepared to act on that change rather than react to it. And that mentality to act rather than react, for me, is an important one, because it gives you freedom in your actions so that you can do what's ever necessary to properly resolve the situation, not enact some kind of a quick fix. You have the time and ability to really consider what's going on. This comes from a time when I did remote and on-site technical support, and we used to joke that all we ever did was put out fires. And the biggest one usually was the customer who was screaming the loudest or the most insistently. They got top priority until somebody else, who may have contacted us much earlier than the fire we were working on, called back and got loud or angry, and then they became the top dog. And we could just wash, rinse, and repeat this cycle over and over again. That situation, we were able to solve the immediate problems, and if we were fortunate enough that no one was overly excited, we could relax and find a solution if there was a more systemic issue. However, if we got swamped and there was a lot going on, that instant fix is what had to be applied at that time. We weren't really able to spend the time to recognize or resolve what was at the root of the problem. And I don't want you to be in that kind of position with your work, where something happens and you can't respond to it with all of your faculties. And I think that putting a bit of preparation in ahead of time, long before you ever need to use your abilities, is what's going to allow you to bring all your knowledge and skills to bear, using the principles you've adopted, whatever they may be, whether it's Holmgren's 12, Mollison's, Hemingway's 14, and use them, guided by your ethics, to find a solution to the problem, and do so in a way that's going to be meaningful to what you're involved in, that it makes sense, and that it will work. Being able to come up with a solution is where your creativity comes into this. Now, I know there are probably some of you who are thinking to yourselves, but Scott, come on, I'm not a very creative person. Look, I've had plenty of people say that to me in the past, and I haven't met one yet where it's actually the case. I mean, sure, you might not be out there painting the next masterpiece, or writing a hit song, or anything like that. But that's not the kind of creativity that I'm talking about. Because if it was, I'd be failing horribly. I don't have those kinds of talents. What this is really about is problem solving, and moving beyond what you think you know, and using everything that you do know to work out a solution. A lot of times that could be in some kind of a new or novel way. But in order to do that, you have to accept that you're not just your college degree or your professional certification, your career or your on-the-job training. All of that's part of it, but this goes back to anything from your lifetime that may or may not at first seem applicable. This is that trip to the museum one time with your parents and this landscape painting that you thought was beautiful. That reminds you of a color that's missing in your design that could be helpful to attract some kind of a beneficial insect or a bird. Or maybe it's just something that because of that beauty you want to include because it's meaningful to you. And every time you see it, it's going to remind you of that time with your parents and that painting in the museum. Or maybe it's, I mean, when I was a kid, my buddies and I would go out and we'd be building forts in the farm fields and the woods all around us in these lean-tos out of sticks and strings. And now I look at that and how could those be modified to make some kind of an arbor for vining plants? Or maybe that's a windbreak to help protect some young delicate plants. Or maybe you took a canoe trip as a kid on the lake and you remember seeing dragonflies eating all kinds of mosquitoes and other things. And well, on that lake, what were the conditions there that you might be able to recreate to bring in dragonflies and help control a mosquito or other insect population without harsh intervention? That's what I want you to be working with when I mention creativity. How can you leverage something you're already familiar with, whenever or however it happened in your life, into a way to resolve what's at hand? I won't say that this use of memory and creativity to solve problems is going to be easy. It's not. There are plenty of traps and pitfalls that come with it. Old patterns of seeing and doing that interfere, but as you work with it and practice it, it does become easier. Accepting that you're going to make mistakes and can use them as learning moments will make this process that much smoother. Don't beat yourself up for it. You can do this. You can practice permaculture successfully and apply it and all the other principles that we talked about in your own way and be as effective as you need to be. Just work with it. Keep doing it. And that brings us to your last assignment for this series on Holmgren's 12 Principles. Now that we've covered the prime directive, ethics, and these 12 principles in detail, go out and practice it all. Start running through these 16 points of consideration as you make decisions and take action in your life. Begin living permaculture. Then, once you see what an impact it can have and what a difference it makes in your life, take a permaculture design course. Get that certificate and share it with others around you. If you do that, I'll keep doing this show to help keep you on track, inspired, and involved. As my home site design grows, as I continue to work with the Urban Agricultural Program, there will be stories about more than just blueberries, maple, and elder for me to share with you. And I'd like you to share your stories with me. An email to show@thepermaculturepodcast.com is the way you can do that in private, or if you want to make it public, leave a comment at thepermaculturepodcast.com. And we've made it all the way through, all 12 of them. This ends our run of Holmgren's 12 Principles of Permaculture, and it's going to bring this episode to a close. If you've enjoyed it, share it with a friend and leave a review on your favorite podcast site. It'll help spread the word. Until the next time, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other.